Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. I'm doing a cold open because the episode you're going to hear, I cut it up into two pieces. It is with Ilya and Nadia Senchuk. They are the winemakers and the co-founders of Leaning Post Wines. And the funny thing is, when I was chatting with them, we were getting set up to do this. They said, we do chat a lot, keep us in line, but we don't talk as much as Thomas Batchelder. We don't go as long as him. And we had a laugh because we all love Thomas. And actually, we address this in the first episode. So you know what? I really don't need to talk about it. Anyway, it's cut up into two parts because we did go long. And I'm not going to lie to you. Like, these guys were so good. This was such a fun interview. And I know I say that all the time. Everyone I interview, there's no one that doesn't have a passion for it. You don't get into winemaking or own a winery unless that means so much to your life. They just did a great job in terms of expressing it and their passion and their emotion. I'm not going to lie to you. At one point late, and this is in part two, there are some tears. And this was just a really cool interview. And in part one, it's a lot of their origin story and some killer single vineyard Chardonnay and Pinot. And we talk about Ontario and tariffs. And also the really funny thing that, in a very odd way, Donald Trump and his tariffs have played a part in making Ontario wine at least a little bit more popular in Ontario. It's funny, just the wine nationalism that's kicked off, and that's great. And by the way, no one's doing a thing of where we, you know, cross our arms like, oh, why aren't you drinking it earlier? Shame on you. There's none of that bullshit. It's just a sort of a nice unintended consequence during a time that is often not very nice. Anyway, so this is part one of the interview. It has a bit of the end. It's a little bit abrupt, but I found sort of a nice spot to cut it up between part one and two. You know what? You'll hear that at the end of this. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, by the way. I don't often say it enough. And for everyone who listens and comments and reviews and rates and subscribes and tells a friend, please do so. And I do apologize. If you heard the last interview with Vadim from Palatine Hills, my voice was a mess. You'll still hear in this interview, the voice isn't 100%. I'm certainly doing much better now. And I felt so bad because I hadn't been able to do an interview in about a month. And the first one, well, I sound like shit. Anyway, you're going to love this one. From Leaning Post Wines, very close to Hamilton, here is Ilya and Nadia Senchuk.
The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I am here at Leaning Post with the founders, the owners, the winemakers, Ilya and Nadia Senchuk. Guys, thank you so much for being on the pod. And I will tell everyone, you guys are sitting there holding a mic. So whoever is going to just grab it and bring it to you to chat. So I'll start. Ilya, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you very much for having us. Yeah, it's a real pleasure.
And Nadia, my first thought when I arrived, I wish I liked wine when I went to McMaster, because you guys are so close to Hamilton. And it's funny, you think Hamilton, you just have a stereotype, but I loved McMaster. I loved going to Hamilton. I wasn't into wine when I was like 20 years old. I wish I was. This place is gorgeous.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. And I have a funny story to tell you about that. I went to a farmer's market in Grimsby, and a man came to me and said, what are you doing there? Everybody knows the only thing Winona can grow is houses. I've never gotten so angry at somebody so quickly in my life. When we were looking at this property, we were in our early 30s, we were dreamers, and we saw this beautiful property and all what it could be. So when I hear naysayers, they just didn't see the vision.
Yeah, you're in Winona, you're not that far from Hamilton. What am I looking at here? We're in your tasting room. I can see, obviously, vineyards to my left and my right. I'm assuming, your vineyards?
Yeah, it is. So we lovingly named it Senchuk Vineyard when we bought the place.
Easy to remember for you guys.
Easy to remember. Yeah. We thought of a lot of ideas, and then, you know, we were even going to call it maybe Leaning Post Vineyard, but then we realized if people came here and wanted to look for it, they would come and ask for the Leaning Post Shard or the Leaning Post Shard, and then it would get very confusing. Generally, we love to name the grower. We're very big on the place and the people who actually grow the grapes. So we just thought, you know, in this case, we're the grape grower. Mm-hmm. So it's the most logical thing in the world. But yeah, I'll just to chime in with what Nadia said. I mean, if you want to know whether we're committed committed to this whole wine thing. So we bought, when we bought this place, it was 14 years ago when we bought it. The house was a triplex, you know, only partially rented out. The barn was kind of leaning over and the vineyard was abandoned. And we moved here in a snowstorm with a 10-month-old.
Jesus.
So we are those people.
Wow, that's, you know what?
Passion over sense 100% of the way.
Yeah, well, I want to go to 2011 and just talk about that. But let's first try, because we'll yammer and try the wines. Also, I love the fact, Nadia, that you're like, keep us in line in terms of not talking too much. And the best is for the listeners, if they've heard my interviews with Thomas Batchelder, they said, we're not as yammery as Batchelder.
That's our line. Yeah. We're always like, but hey, was I shorter? And they're like, of course you were shorter. Well, then
yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah, that's a low, that's a pretty easy bar.
Yes, but.
And I say that with love.
Yes, we love you, Thomas.
So the first one, the 2024 Sauvignon Blanc. I imagine we'll start with that and then go and then go to the Chardonnays. You guys started out as a Chard Pinot house, right? And then
we still are. Honestly, predominantly, like we're so everybody, we're sort of about 6,000 cases a year, but we are 75% Chardonnay and Pinot. Mm-hmm. So still overall our big focus is on doing Chardonnay or Pinot across Niagara and little individual single vineyards, so sub appellations, little spots. We actually do 4 single vineyard Chardonnays, 4 single vineyard Pinot Noirs, plus ones that are kind of more regional. So that's a big focus of what we do. And then we like to say we're Pinot Chard and friends.
And that being said, like Sauvignon Blanc, we like to find those unique plots of land across Niagara to put the best in glass. People don't necessarily think of Sauvignon Blanc when they think of Niagara, but it's so good. I like to say this wine is like if you take the Loire Valley and New Zealand and they had a child, that taste, that structure right in the middle. That's why I love this wine.
And okay, because I was going to ask the motivation to do Sauvignon Blanc, just a personal love for it. That was first and foremost then.
Yeah, definitely personal love. And also, honestly, I always think that, you know, there's always some skill and then some luck. And these grapes, it was a vineyard that I had worked with previously in Niagara-on-the-Lake, but the grapes weren't available. And then randomly about 6-7 years ago, they were. And I just thought, you know, I happen to know that the Sauvignon Blanc are particularly interesting because they give you both those kind of, I like to say it's both yellow and green. It gives you the green notes and it gives you all the tropical kind of things. Pretty simple winemaking. A portion of this does stay in barrel for about 5 months, give it a little bit of texture, but we are trying to do a very classic, and it gives you sort of a cool ripe style. So all of that is the reason, like it's Niagara Lakeshore, so it ends up being like both cool and warm at the same time.
What I appreciate is I think some people want to run away from Marlborough because of the, you know, it can be really aggressive and so people turn their back on it. And you're right, this has some of that New Zealand, but it's not the overly, it's not the aggressive one, but you can smell it. It's not, some people I think make Sauvignon Blanc, but they want to apologize for it. This one's not. Like all the noses, you can tell right away what this is, but then you're right, the cool structure, the linearness on the acidity there, which is more Loire, is all there on this wine.
So one of the things that Ilya and I always say is that we make wine without apology. We always are trying to make some of the best wines that we possibly can. If it's not your cup of tea, that's okay. No worries. I'm sure there's other lovely wineries that can do that for you. Sauvignon Blanc is a category now, which is absolutely insane. Like it wasn't 15 years ago. This wine has gotten us on some of the best wine lists across Toronto. And it's exciting. That's sometimes how people are finding us.
Okay, we'll go to 2011 in a second. The National Club, which is, you know, a very well-known downtown Toronto private club. And it, you know, has like one of the largest wine cellars in the world.
Shout out to our friend Jeremy Ennis, who is the sommelier and the head of beverage, but anyway.
Yes.
And has also made wine here for about almost 5 vintages. So,
and Jeremy's doing a great job.
He's like, doing an awesome job.
He's doing such a good job taking over for Brian Perry. When I joined the National Club, that was back in 06. God, I don't know, I'm trying to make it about me. I'm not going to. The point is, I never would have thought there would be several different Ontario wines by the glass. But right now at the National Club, you can get a glass of Leaning Post Chardonnay by the glass, Cloudsley Cellars Pinot by the glass. And I think it's just one of the really cool things that we're seeing that I don't think I would have seen a decade ago.
Oh, that's definitely true. I mean, the one thing that's been awesome, I mean, if you've met Nadia and I, we like to say we're from the grape growing mecca of Winnipeg originally. Mm-hmm. but we moved here. year to Niagara. And so we chose Niagara. And I think we chose it for all the right reasons. We just love it here. And we've been huge advocates, obviously. I mean, we literally moved our family and started a winery in this area. So we obviously really, really believe in it. The amazing thing is we've always had the wines here, I think, and they're getting better and better every year. And then we always try and say we're unapologetic. We don't want to do the Canadian thing, but we are finally seeing that on the consumer side too. Something happened between COVID and then honestly the tariff thing. All those things, you kind of have these moments in history where people maybe weren't paying attention before, if that makes sense. And then now all of a sudden they do, and they turned around and they were like, huh, wonder what's happening in Niagara and Ontario. And they were like, oh, like really great things. That's amazing. And for the first time, there's a whole bunch of people who weren't really looking and then kind of like rediscovered their own backyard, which has been just fascinating and amazing.
You know, it's really bizarre to think, and this is mostly tongue in cheek. And I'm saying that on the front end. Donald Trump helped the Ontario wine industry by getting everyone to say, fuck you, America. And no offense to America. We love you. And I love so many California and Oregon and Washington.
Fuck you.
But just the policies, because there's so many great wineries all across the United States. Finger Lakes, Cheddar, too, as well. It did seem to create some wine nationalism in Ontario that you see in BC, but you see far less here in Southern Ontario.
So, I mean, I will take whatever it takes to get people to drink more Canadian wine. And I'm so grateful for that. We started to see it at the beginning of COVID. People couldn't leave, so they found what was in their own backyard. And that was a huge shift towards us. But there's no doubt about it. These tariffs have certainly done a lot more. And it's just exciting to see people tasting the wines and thinking, No, these aren't going to be good. Holy crap, these are great.
Yeah. It's so, like, first off, I haven't tried yet the 21 Grimsby Hillside Vineyard Chardonnay, but on one smell, I'm like, okay, for people that love their California Chard, I love my California Chard. It's probably well-made, $40, $50, California Chard. I can take one sniff. I'm like, here, oh no, tariffs, you can't get your Cali Chard. But this wine will certainly fill all the spaces, won't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's the thing that we have right now. Like I said, I think it's just a lot of people were just really had not tried Ontario wine for a very long time. Like probably, I like to say the most exciting time in Ontario wine has been the last 10, 15 years. And some people hadn't even tried a wine in that time. Our winery is 11 years old, yeah. Like to give you an idea. And a lot of the really exciting wines coming out are in the last 10 to 15 years. So, and the next two wines we poured you were kind of meant to show what our philosophy is all about. So I deliberately poured two single vineyard Chardonnays next to each other. The first one you just mentioned, Grimsby Hillside Frontier Block. So it's actually a 30-year-old block of Chardonnay up a slope. The coolest thing is it is 800 meters from our front door.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one is Sanchuk Vineyard. So it's literally our farm right here that we're overlooking.
So, okay, we're going to geek out in a second about what are the differences between the Grimsby and the Sanchuk Vineyard and why are they different and the microclimates. And we're going to do all that nerdy stuff in 1 second. But where did this passion come from where in the end you take a chance where Ontario wine wasn't as normalized as it is now? You have a small child, a blinding snowstorm, you get property outside of Hamilton because you want to make Burgundian style wines. Where the hell did that start?
The silliness and craziness of youth. I'm gonna blame that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Ilya was a winemaker. I had finished my MBA and I was working at the bank, and I knew that I did not want to work at the bank for the rest of my life. And I thought, I want to open up a business. Hey, Ilya knows something about wine. Let's mm-hmm. do that.
Yeah.
And no, Nadia, no. This is not for the people who don't have a lot of money. You need to start with a lot to do this. But what we did, we just had this passion, this drive, and this was our pillow talk at the beginning of when we first got married. We would sit there before kids and we would think, oh my goodness, one day if we ever have our own place, what's it going to be called? What kind of wines are we going to be doing? And that pillow talk just started to build momentum to a point where you just couldn't imagine yourself not doing it.
This is also, just thinking about it, I wasn't going to go here. I could show you my list of questions. But Leaning Post, this is really a story of trust, of you guys trusting each other, of loving each other, because I mean, the number one reason people get divorced, I think, is money. And then, like, you're doing this. This is a massive risk and chance. But, like, I can see it, just how much faith you guys have in each other. You know, it's like, okay, this is what we want to do. You make wine. Let's do this together. It's a really nice story.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, it's, you know, most people, like, we literally live and work together all the time. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, that seems to be where we do our best stuff, like, in life and in work. Yeah, and in love. And that's why, I don't know. I don't know why that works, but we just... do it every day, and we do love it.
Absolutely. And the only other thing I wanted to say was that I knew, and I really had truly had faith in his winemaking abilities. Mm-hmm. And I was a banker. I know how to finance things.
Right.
I know how to make it work. So, like, also, I made a promise very early on that the accountant and the banker in me will never make winemaking decisions.
How, hold on though. How hard is that?
Because it's really hard.
Because sometimes it's like, no, no, we've got to, we have to use all the grapes. We can't, you know, get the same yield as in Chambu Moussigny. We need to make money. That's hard to do.
Well, what we've learned is the good news. Yeah. That I like to say, whenever we have something like that come up, we have a board meeting, which is Nadia and I and a glass of wine on the patio.
Yeah.
and then we figure it out, because the one thing we're both passionate about, I mean, I will tip my hat to Nadia. She, you know, we always said, if a winemaker and a banker can't make it work, then who can? But yeah, actually, Nadia also took the business very seriously, and you know, she has an MBA and she did all this other stuff. But then she also went when we had three children already and this place was open, she actually went and did her certified psalm with Bruce Wallner. So shout out to Bruce as well.
Wow.
In Toronto.
You were doing with Bruce.
Yeah.
He's both very nice and very mean.
Yes. Yeah. So we took the whole business really seriously and loved it. And so it's a huge passion. So when we make wine, we just really, the best way to think of it is we start with amazing grapes and then we really are honest about the wine. And it's amazing. They end up kind of working themselves out. I know we have a funny internal thing that I always say, which is like, if you're really honest about your wines, then like everything you make is not awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, like, you know, when we put out a wine, like the wines we're tasting here are sort of, you know, $55, $65. These are a top single vineyard Chardonnays, but we make other stuff. And you know, you got to be honest with yourself and say, like, that Chardonnay you were talking about at the National Club, that is more like sort of $30-$35.
Yeah.
You got to be honest and say, look, this wine is amazing. Maybe not like $70 amazing, but it's still really great. And then all of a sudden, your decisions are much easier than they sound, because you just are really honest about the wines. And I think anything we put out, we really feel that we're giving people value for money. So whether it's, you know, $25, whether it's $40, whether honestly it's $100, we really feel that anything we put out there is something that is really amazing. You'll learn something, you'll feel the area, and you'll feel like you got relative value for money at whatever price point you're at.
Because we don't want a customer just for today. We want a customer that is a raving fan that comes back with friends and other friends time and time again. That's our strategy.
Yeah, and as I always say, this is the broken record part. No one should have sticker shock, because anyone who's making wine here, you're not making tons of profit. It's everything is going back into it. So if it's the $60 bottle, well, then the yields were there, the handpicked, the you know, just everything is in the bottle. By the way, so three kids, winery, getting the certified thing, driving to Toronto, hanging out with Bruce Wallner as he's trying to mess you up. How much sleep did you get during that period?
During any period?
Okay.
Like right now or like?
Okay, we'll start then. We'll start then and then we'll move to last night.
In general, I'm working on it. I'm working on a work-life balance. It's not perfect.
Over under six a night.
Oh, I'm over. I desperately
okay,
need
so you
over.
Still get over six. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
We just accepted that. I think when you take on something like this, that the reality is work-life balance for us is a little bit different. Like wine and this place and our children and our employees and our customers and everything we do are all part of the same life. Does that make sense?
They're all work. They're all life.
Yeah. There is no work-life balance between us. Our work and life and living is all part of the same crazy continuum. And we seem to be okay with it. We're built for that.
It's your passion. It's your identity. So it's fine. You almost have to get rid of the word work. It's not work. This is just your life.
Exactly. You know? Especially because the amazing thing is, honestly, we have such a great crew now, and we've kind of built this place up now that a lot of the time, honestly, Nadia and I spend doing amazing things like this. Like we do a lot of, I was saying the other day, like when you start to drag yourself down, you're like, oh, I'm just so tired tonight. You realize, okay, like I'm tired because somebody's making me an awesome meal again. And then they're pouring our wine with like Michelin star food. And then we're having awesome wine and talking about wine and drinking and eating. It's not really so hard.
Yeah. No.
And then you realize you're like, I'm not really actually working that hard here. Yeah. I'm just having a really great time with people who are also passionate about wine. And I think that is our ethos anyway. And it's what we love. And it's been, yeah, amazing so far.
Well, let's go over these two Chardonnays. What do people need to know in terms of, we'll just start on the aromatics, the difference, would you say, between the Grimsby and the Senchuk? And it can be hard. I can tell immediately, like, oh, these are different plots where the Chardonnay is from.
Our philosophy is I want someone to be able to come into this winery and say, oh, I've heard of Chardonnay before. Mm-hmm. And then taste four different Chardonnays and say, these all taste different. Why? Mm-hmm. And then we get into the awesome conversation about terroir. Why we picked these grapes, why these grapes are grown there, what are those influences?
The neatest thing, the reason I love pouring these two wines is, so I think you've kind of alluded to it, but you can really see it as we're sitting here. So those far trees there, for everybody who can see us, that is Lake Ontario, and the escarpment is right here. So the most interesting thing about this weird little bit of Niagara is we are 1.6 kilometers total lake to escarpment. So we are much, much narrower, skinnier than any other part. So although we get the same Niagara sunshine, we are very, very lake influenced. So again, you were talking about those Burgundian varieties. So on average, it's a cooler, more windswept part of Niagara. And then these two vineyards in particular are only 800 meters apart. So Senchuk Vineyard here is 800 meters from the escarpment. The Grimsby Hillside Vineyard is literally at the base. That's the hillside. It's right up against it. So two different soil types, two very different spots. So you'll notice the Grimsby Hillside, for example, is this great core kind of mineral stone, but also really kind of peachy, bright, soft. Whereas the Senchuk is more like fruity, but also kind of a little bit brighter and greener, you know, and a little bit more kind of really, really rocky. Mm-hmm. So again, and the neat thing is, you know, you could talk about all that, or you can just get into the fact that, as Nadia said, like, they are definitely very different wines, and the winemaking is not. So I think that's when we talk about, when you hear about this word terroir, what we try and explain is, at its very simple core, we grew these grapes here at the property, and then we grew grapes 800 meters away at the base of the escarpment, and then we did nothing different. And yet the wines are super different. And that's terroir. It's farming. Yeah. I like to say we're very, very fancy farmers. Like very, you know, there's a lot of steps in between. But what we're doing here is like very, very fancy way of getting a specific place in bottle.
And then the other thing I wanted to highlight, what I want you to see with these Chardonnays. Ilya always says, listen, if I've done my job correctly, we're not talking about the oak. Do you notice in that whole conversation, we didn't really talk about the fact that these are oak Chardonnays. They were in oak for 16 months, but he says all the time, I work in a gallery. I am trying to place this work of art so that we're not even talking about the frame. The frame is just the wood that surrounds the piece of art. And that is not what Chardonnay should be all about. He's like, if I've done my job right, we're not talking about the oak at all. It's certainly there. It's present. It's giving structure and texture, but it's not screaming in your face and you're not getting a splinter.
It's not the thing you lead with on the nose. It's not the thing you lead with on the palate. And it is there. And I always say, I like oak. I like oak done by smart people. And Chardonnay is a grape that uses it. I don't want oak in my Riesling. And I know some people go, we got this oaked Riesling. I'm like, awesome. I'll just have something else. You know, and that's just my own taste. This grape works with it as long as you work it well.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, in the end, it's what it's what Niagara, particularly West Niagara, is great at. And what I think particularly our little weird bit of West Niagara is really great at. We mm-hmm. talked about the one thing we're also trying to do is really kind of focus on, you know, Nadia made a joke about different areas having a child, but actually, like, we get wine writers now from around the world. We're you know, we're in a bunch of markets around the world now. We're in UK and Denmark, and we just launched in Singapore. We're about to go to Norway. That's been really amazing to see, because for the first time, I really believe we're doing that Canadian thing where, like, instead of apologizing for all the things we're not, we're starting to finally say, look, these are the things we are. And it's really cool to see, because we are sort of, as a whole country, we're not this, we're not that. Well, that makes you pretty unique, right? It's like, you know, when you have two parents coming together, their kid is pretty different. They're kind of bits of the other thing, but they're not really the same. And I think that's been the most amazing thing about our wines here.
And we just want to celebrate our differences, celebrate what makes us who we are. We certainly have aspirations to be considered similar to Burgundy, but we are not Burgundy. We are Lincoln Lakeshore, Niagara, Ontario. That is who we are.
I was the one who first said earlier, I use the term your Burgundian varietals, but I think it is important, because I roll my eyes when you'll go to 12 different wineries, and this is not just an Ontario thing, but you'll get
around
this in
the
California,
where Oregon, yeah.
And they always like, well, we do ours in a more Burgundian style. I'm like, every fucking person is saying the same thing. Yeah. And listen, I get it. I understand. It's about proper yield management and only using the best grapes and terroir and hand-picked. Like, I understand it. But at some point, I want it to be, it's a Wismer Chard. Okay, fantastic. Yeah. Or the Grimsby one, or, you know, Prince Edward County versus here and all that. Like, at some point, it has to be more about, we honor and we fell in love because of Burgundy, but this is now Ontario. I think that's an important thing.
Oh, definitely. That's our number one thing. I like it's often like cooking, and it's a funny thing because, you know, we sort of 20 years ago, really, Canadian cuisine really took off in a way, and people understood it. And I think weirdly now we're at the same point in Canadian wine where perhaps our models are European or French and Burgundian, but it's a model. And then what you do is you take your local ingredient and you make it your own. Mm-hmm. That is the normal thing that chefs do all the time. And I think for the first time, really, in the history of Niagara, we're doing that. And I think that's the coolest thing. I will say, in our defense, in terms of, like you said, everybody talks about Burgundy. The probably the most interesting thing about Niagara is we are truly, when people talk sort of Europe versus kind of New World areas, a lot of the New World is actually kind of the same region, just hotter or cooler.
Yeah.
When we think of it, there's the Pacific Ocean, there's a set of mountains, you're on one side or the other a set of mountains, and then you're north or south of there. And then so what starts to happen, that kind of covers a big chunk, you know, from BC all the way down to California, Chile, Argentina, New Zealand, Australia, all these places have that sort of influence. The weirdest thing about Niagara, honestly, is that we are, as a plane flies, an hour further from northern France than we are from Vancouver.
Right. Oh, I never even thought of it that way.
And you know what else we are? We are continental, humid, rolling hills, very much like northern France, as opposed to the sort of mountainous Pacific thing, which I love. I love the West Coast. But we have to be honest with ourselves and say, we are not the West Coast. We are sort of continental and marine, very much like a lot of parts of sort of northern Europe. And when you start to think about that, there aren't many sort of new worldy areas where we're culturally new world, but physically and climactically like the old world. And so we are that place where I think those places meet, and it ends up being this cool kind of fusion of, like, really properly in a way Burgundian style, but more like the way the wines act, not really the way they taste, if that makes sense. They taste like Niagara.
Right.
They taste like our area, which is the most amazing part of the whole thing we're doing here, I think.
We like to throw away the whole, like, old world versus new world kind of garbage. Mm-hmm. For us, cool climate and hot climates,
yeah,
that's where you really see the huge difference. And we are cool climate, and unapologetically cool climate, because for us, that's where you get wines of power, but delicacy and expressiveness. Ilya's actually wearing a t-shirt right now. Three loud notes in a wine does not mean complexity.
Little Axel Foley. That is Beverly Hills. Beverly Hills Cop One, I believe.
So I like to do these meme shirts that kind of give our philosophies in, like, actual memes, because I think people kind of get it, and it does cut to the chase of kind of like what our whole philosophy is all about. And I think the amazing thing is, so I will say, we sort of mentioned it a little bit, but, you know, yes, some of our wines are not the cheapest wines on the market. However, in a world context, the coolest thing is actually that our wines are really hugely relevant relative value. Like it's been amazing. Like I think the only thing legitimately that Niagara doesn't do super well is like if you want a Cabernet Sauvignon for $14, then you know Niagara in Ontario is probably not the place for you.
Yeah.
But outside of that, to be honest, we have amazing companies, amazing wineries doing wines at all price points. You know, our wines start just above $20 and then they do go up the price thing. But I'll actually quote a sommelier in Copenhagen who works at a top like Michelin star restaurant. He tasted our top Sanchuk Pinot and he was like, holy shit. It's okay if we swear, right?
I already swore twice.
Yeah, okay, good. He was like, holy shit, this is like Premier Cru or Grand Cru, like Monopole single vineyard Burgundy at like unknown village price. Like our top wines top out at about $70-$80. And I can tell you that a lot of parts of the world now, that's like entry level on those areas. So we, in our context, are making some of the best wine in the world for literally half price. That's been true for probably 10 years, but it's especially true post-COVID and all the crazy inflation.
So. Oh, yeah. No one can afford it. I've heard it a lot of times. People from France will say, you should charge more for your wine. And I'm like, shut up. I'm sorry for you because you can make more money. But I think part of it also is just normalizing that. And listen, you're not drinking $60 wine on a Wednesday. And well, I mean, maybe not. Maybe you are.
And if you are, I'd love an invite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, maybe some of us don't have children or care about cars, and then you can. Why are you guys judging me? But the point is that we have to do just to normalize it because those Chardonnays were awesome. Like those are complex, full-bodied, structured Chardonnay. And if you pour that for someone and say, oh yeah, that was a $130 Premier Cru, $150 Premier Cru Chardonnay. You're like, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's Meursault? Oh, yeah, no, I like that. Oh, Meursault, that's awesome. And like, no, it's Lini Post. It's $60. I think that's something we just need to continue to try to normalize.
No, and it's been amazing. So we were always on that train, but I think it's what we said. Just, you know, again, oddly, you know, thank you, Donald Trump. We really weirdly, I've never thanked him for anything. But in this case, it just had people kind of turn their heads and maybe pay attention really to what's happening in Ontario, what's happening in Niagara, and what's happening in the glass in a way that I think, you know, as you said, people just weren't sure before. Again, the example of cooking I always give, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, there were not necessarily a lot of crazy top restaurants. Now, you know, in Toronto or any big city, it's pretty normalized to go drop some serious money at an amazing restaurant and it's, you know, local ingredients and awesome chef. And we don't really bat an eye at that. And yeah. I think for the first time, honestly, the cool thing is a lot of people aren't batting an eye at these wines. Like if anything, we're blowing, honestly, since the tariffs, we're blowing through the wines a little faster. I'm starting to get worried because we keep running out of things, but I can't.
Good problem to have.
But it's a good problem to have. It's the same thing. I can't worry about that. We have to worry about always making something awesome so that when somebody buys it, they're never disappointed. And that's the only thing we can worry about. We can't worry about, like, you know, decisions we made 5 years ago.
I think, you know what? I use the word normalize, but I think the word really is permission. Someone who's in their 40s, 50s, 60s, they've been buying wine and they've probably bought wine that was over $100. They'll do it. Italy. Oh, yeah, no, I'm going to get a Brunello. $80 on a Brunello. Fine. But you almost like we have to tell people, give yourself permission. You can spend the same amount on the Ontario wine. It's made with the same level of care. It's the oak and everything that went into that bottle of Ontario, went into that bottle from Chianti, or went in that bottle of Northern Rhone. You know, I think some of it we need to give people, they need to give themselves permission. It's okay to spend that money on Ontario.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the reason for that is people expect, oh, well, it costs money to bring it here, so it should be more expensive. And, oh, well, it's just down the road. Shouldn't it be cheaper?
No. Nope.
But in reality, if you look quality to quality, we are significantly cheaper. This wine that we're pouring today is in other markets around the world, and the best price you're going to get is at home. Lucky you.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, that's honest truth. Like that Chardonnay that we had, that 65 here, it runs $80 to $100 in every other market that we're in. These Pinots, same thing. Like this Sanchuk Pinot is sort of runs about $70 here. It actually runs £68 in the UK, so it's about $120. It runs 100 Singapore dollars, and it runs roughly 500 kroner in Denmark, which is also just under $100. So the neat thing to me is that our wines are even showing that on an international market, that, you know, we really are getting the best price here because this is our home market. Most importantly, they're just showing their mettle here. And I think that, you know, I mean, it's one of those annoying things, but I appreciate our humility as Canadians. I do. But it's, you know, once you kind of people in other countries kind of give it a stamp of approval, it just gives people permission here.
Gives permission.
A little bit more. And yeah. I love that. And I think, honestly, you know, we sort of built a weird loyal fan base here. So we kind of built a little bit of a bubble. And now we're just kind of in the like expanding the fan base mode as people see us around the world. So actually we're going next week to the UK as an example. So
yeah. And I mean, all you need is a couple decanter scores at Jancis Robinson saying something nice. And then it's sort of, then everyone feels permission that they can spend.
Yeah. Yeah. And that totally happened with us exactly in that era. Like we happened that we released a bunch of wines and we got some great scores about 3-4 years ago. And that really took people just to that level. Like we already had our fans, and I will shout out to, we've had an interesting history on that too. You know, I will say the restaurant community has really been huge supporters when nobody knew who we were. Our very first couple of vintages of wines honestly went to sort of 20, 25 Somms that I just kind of knew in Toronto. And they bought it all. They bought one or two cases each and the whole thing went out. So I will shout out to the restaurant community big time because, you know, I know that maybe some other people haven't had the love, but they've always really, really given us a great deal of love and permission when they sort of did have to at the beginning pour for their guests and kind of tell them to drink it. Now that doesn't seem to be as much of an issue for us, but back in the day that was certainly a thing. And I will always tip my hat to all the Somms who really believed in the wines and kind of saw that when this barn didn't look like this and this whole place didn't look like this.
So. Well, let's go to that theme of it didn't look like this. What were the first couple of years like for you guys?
Okay, I'm going to tell you the story of when I told my mother Mom, we just bought a vineyard. And she's like, okay, great. Show me pictures. And I showed her pictures. And she kind of started to cry. And they weren't...
Not the good way.
They weren't good tears.
No.
She looked at me and she said, I know you're stubborn. You're going to do what you want to do. But please, can you just watch one movie? Remember the movie Money Pit with Tom Hanks from the 80s?
Of course.
Him and his wife bought this shithole of a place.
Shelley Long. I think it was Shelley Long.
Absolutely. He gets stuck in a carpet in the floor.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. She said, if you watch that and you still want to do it, then you know what? I'll be with you. I'll help you along the way, but God help you. But that's what I mean. We were young and foolish and only saw the potential. And it's just been wonderful. Like we've had customers that have been with us from the beginning that actually complained. Geez, you got a new door. Oh, you put siding on the place. Oh, you put insulation in. You know what? You're just losing a little bit of that charm.
we can't win on that one. It's so true. We actually had one couple come in and the lady seemed like genuinely upset. And we were like, oh, you don't like the wines? What's the problem? You've been coming here like literally since we opened our doors when we didn't have central heating. And she was like, you paved your driveway.
Really?
And we were like, oh, well, actually, I was finding digging up half my driveway with snow really crazy. Like, I love having the paved driveway. I don't get stuck in mud. And she was like, I don't like it. We were like, okay.
The nice thing with that is a sense of ownership because they've been coming here for so long. I experience it on radio. People that really like a radio show, they listen every day and they get a sort of a sense of ownership. So you get that same thing here. And that will do it for part one. And I know, sort of an abrupt ending, just talking about people that are big fans of the winery, they get really close to it and you do have this sense of ownership and you don't want anything to change. It's kind of like, you know, you find this band that you fall in love with and then they become more popular and then everyone is listening to them. And it's like, wait a minute, I used to get to see you at tiny bars and now you are playing at Sky Dome. And there, I love that sense of ownership. There's something very, it's almost the ultimate compliment. Anyway, so that is the end of part one with Ilya and Nadia Senchuk. In part two, cliffhanger alert, part two, we pick it up where I ask them what were some of the toughest moments for these guys in their first couple years making great wine. Thanks again for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.